Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network. Alongside the former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're coming to you from coast to coast, as always. Michael out there on the East Coast. I'm live at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Lots of NFL talk to get to, including what was a pretty shocking upset, I think, yesterday in Minnesota with the Vikings beating the San Francisco 49ers 22-17. We'll get to some headlines, updates, also some college football this hour, which I am super excited about. We're going to have VSiN's own Aaron Moore join us in just a little bit, but there are some really, I think, sneaky, interesting games on the week nine slate in college football this week. We have a new favorite for the Heisman Trophy who happens to play at Michigan that's under investigation for sign stealing, and from a narrative standpoint, how that could impact certain things. Michael, I'm like, there's just so much going on. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, this whole Michigan investigation for sign stealing, that happens in baseball all the time, and all of a sudden you think if you're giving out signs, somebody's not going to steal them in football. Trust me, there's a lot of people, maybe lots too strong, that are in the Hall of Fame that were very good at stealing signs. I'll just leave it at that.
Subtle punctuation on the end of that sentence. Yes, so we will discuss that, which I think is going to be a really good conversation with Aaron in just a little bit. And we also have a new article out on the website, vsin.com, from you today, talking about why NFL teams don't need to tank. And a perfect start to the article, talking about your experience as a Philadelphia 76ers fan on the first day of the NBA season. I felt like it was very appropriate, kind of push those two worlds together. But let's get into that, Michael. And why, especially as we approach the trade deadline 1 week from today, this is an important conversation for bettors to have.
Well, most fans want their team to tank. They want to get a high draft pick. And certainly, you know, there's 19 teams in the National Football League currently that are 500 or below. 19, right? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are one of those teams, and they qualify for the seventh spot. So the quality of teams in the NFL are not great. We know this, right? Also, the quality of quarterbacking in the NFL is not great, which then lies the story. You don't need to tank in the NFL. All you need is a bad quarterback. And you need a bad quarterback and probably not a very good defense. And the next thing you know, you will not have a hard time winning games. Because of why? Because most of the games in the National Football League come down to the last 10 minutes of the game. And your quarterback has to make a play. Your quarterback has to make a tight window throw. Your quarterback's got to be successful. And typically, backup quarterbacks can't do that. So you don't have to go into the season and say, we're going to tank. If you're playing with Brian Hoyer, or if you're playing with Malik Willis, you're tanking. You're not saying you're tanking, but you're tanking. It's going to be hard to win a game. So my whole point of the column was you don't have to take the NBA mentality and translate it into football, because they're two different sports. And tanking, you know, in basketball, if you don't even try, there's no guarantee you get the first pick in the draft anyway, because you got to win that lottery.
Exactly.
So, you know, and then when you break it down, those 19 teams, four of them think they have their answer at quarterback and a couple have veterans.
Those four that believe they have their answers, you know, the Chargers, Texans, Panthers, and Colts, a lot of those obviously rookie young quarterbacks trying to make their way moving forward. The Chargers, I think, a really interesting case with Justin Herbert, who they just paid a boatload of money to, but still continue to struggle under Brandon Staley. And to your point about the Titans, and I know we talked about them a little bit already earlier on the show, as well as with Will Hill. For anybody who missed any of our one that wasn't able to join us on VSiN, this show should be available in podcast form in just a little bit for you to go catch up. But for the Titans, a team that we just saw ship out their two-time All-Pro safety in Kevin Byard, and are having struggles at quarterback, Ryan Tannehill unavailable with an ankle. So are they going to play both Malik Willis and Will Levis? We'll see. But that's what Mike Vrabel at least had to say in his press conference earlier today. But a team that isn't obviously going to go out there and intentionally try to lose every week. Mike Vrabel, as a head coach, is still going to coach his team hard. The players are going to play hard, probably get a little bit more out of those guys than you would anticipate. But as far as a rebuild, that's exactly what it looks like they're poised to do here moving forward.
Right. And my point of the column is don't look at the betting lines as if you can count on a team. Right. Oh, they're not going to play hard, and so let me take that team. No, I mean, even last year, I mean, look at some of the Colt games with our man, with our man Saturday in the park. I mean, you know, the Colts tried to win some. Now, at the end of the year, we can have this conversation. In December, when you know your coach is getting fired or you know the season's over, we can have it. But here in October and November, there's no reason to have it. The line, you've got to stay true to the number and true to your handicap of the team and not kind of have this conversation of basically thinking your team's going to tack. Remember, I said this to you earlier in the show, the 49ers, when Kyle took over the team, they were a two-win team. Over the next 2 years, he won 10 games. Then he won 13 and went to the Super Bowl. Next year, he won 6. So, like, all of a sudden, we have this notion that they've been great for this so long. No, they've been a very consistent team the last 3 years. But he's only 9 games over 500 as a head NFL coach. So, you know, and he's been able to get the quarterback fixed through the seventh round pick. A trade and a seventh round pick. He's yet to be able to hit with the quarterback in the draft. And that's kind of remarkable. That's why he's only 9 games over 500. That's why you don't have to worry about tanking in the NFL. Your quarterback will tank for you because he's not good enough.
Which continues to be something that is like mind-boggling for me, that we talked about it earlier this week as well. The fact that there are only 32 of these jobs in the world, right? To be in the National Football League, to be a starting quarterback, and we're still seeing the level of quarterback play be as bad as it is across the league. And then you throw injuries into the mix and you have second string guys who are just adding another layer of being even worse from that standpoint. It's rough. And so for the 49ers specifically, for them to have had a challenge in this area for so long and essentially luck out in the draft the way they did with Mr. Relevant, the final pick in the draft a season ago with Brock Purdy, and for him to play at the level he is, and I know it's hard to say level he is coming off of the game that he had last night where he throws 2 interceptions on the final 2 offensive possessions of the game with the game on the line, but he's overall been great. And with the amount of money, right, Michael, that the 49ers have to pay him being so small for these next couple of years, I think this is the window. This is the opportunity for San Francisco to make a push and win that Super Bowl. So with the trade deadline coming up this week, like, in my mind, I want to see them go all in and get one more piece. I want to see them do something maybe on the back end defensively similar to what the Eagles did. And maybe that's just recency bias because I'm pissed off at Charvarius Ward for yesterday. But you tell me, like, what can they do? Because with some of their stars aging and them going out and getting Christian McCaffrey last year, I feel like all the eggs need to be in that basket while you don't have to pay your quarterback.
Yeah, well, there's no question. They have this window and this luxury. They can take advantage of it. But you got to figure out what piece could really make it. What piece could get them over the hump? Could they use another defensive lineman? Would you trade a bunch of assets to get Chase Young? You know, I think you probably would. Would Washington rather trade him to you than Philadelphia? Sure.
Yeah.
But can you get him on the field? Can you get him to play? And then what assets are you giving away for the short term, right? Because are you going to re-sign him? Can you afford to re-sign him? He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So I think you have to take all that into consideration. And you've got to be able to look at that and say, okay, here's where we are. And I think it's going to be the right fit with the right deal. I mean, last night, I don't think you can overreact to last night. I mean, think about this. The Vikings are 51-1 going into the fourth quarter with a lead. It's remarkable, right? They're really good at that. Meanwhile, the 49ers, when they're down by 8 points or more entering the fourth quarter, they're 0-36 with Kyle. So it's kind of two things. They make a horrendous call at the end of the half. Blitz zero. Why? I don't know. It's not Ward. They should have been playing Tampa too. They should have been playing 3 Cloud. Make them throw the check down. They had no time. They had no timeouts left, right? But you give up that 7 points, that's the difference in the game.
Yeah.
That's the difference in the game. And so for Purdy not playing well, I get it. Why didn't Purdy play well? I'll tell you why. Because when Kyle, like Sean, like a lot of these guys, when they can't get the lead early and when they can't run the football, they get into trouble. That's their offenses built with play action. Look at Detroit. Got behind against them. All of a sudden, Jared Goff looks like, uh-oh, maybe we've overvalued him. Well, the situation's different. Last night, they had 21 carries for 48 yards. if you take out the Brock Purdy 17-yard run. They're not going to be able to play if they don't play their style. No matter how good we think the 49ers are, if you make them play outside of their character, if they get behind in the third quarter and they got to throw it, it's not going to be good.
Yeah, and so we talk so much about those two interceptions and Brock Purdy not living up to expectations at the end of the game the way that he largely has in the past for San Francisco. But there are a number of moments that I look to in the first half, like the 49ers and playing out in front, right? They usually have such an incredible opening drive game script, and they were driving down the field, but Christian McCaffrey has that fumble. So they lose that opportunity to go up 7-0 early, right? And then at the end of the half, like you're talking about the importance of the middle eight, they score that touchdown, which you're like, okay, you have the long drive, take a lot of time off the clock, leave just about a minute left for the Vikings. Just all you got to do is get a stop. And then you make that play call decision defensively, which I know Kyle Shanahan said after the game, that's something that would certainly be talked about with he and their defensive coordinator afterwards, Steve Wilkes. But yeah, like there are moments throughout the game where we can't put all of the blame on Brock Purdy late, right? And so I think that there's still a lot of reason for optimism about the San Francisco 49ers team. I'm not dropping them out of my top five teams in the National Football League right now because they've dropped back-to-back games. Like, let's get that out of there because I heard a lot of that this morning. But no, I think it's a really, really good conversation to be had about the 49ers and the Vikings and their futures moving on this season, because all of a sudden it looks like the Vikings could be a playoff team as well. So we got to take a quick break here, but more Lombardi Line when we return. Don't go anywhere. This is VSiN and DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With all four major sports in action, no better time of year to be a sports bettor. And with our new Sports Equinox special, no better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now and get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120. That includes daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits page, plus our exclusive betting content for the rest of the MLB playoffs, college football, the NFL season, March Madness, NBA and NHL, as well as the NFL draft in the summer. Don't miss it. It's a limited time offer. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you can sign up. We continue here on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We got Thursday night football coming up in just a matter of days already as we turn the page to week 8 of the NFL season. Short week for both the Bucks and Bills. Buffalo laying 8.5 points at home, total 42, and some minor and major injuries to update you on. With a short week, I know these early practices are more like walkthroughs. It's not really like a whole lot going on here, but it was interesting to see Baker Mayfield listed as a DNP on the estimated injury report yesterday dealing with a knee. Today, he talked to media, said, hey, it's not going to be an issue for my availability on Thursday, but at their walkthrough, did have a sleeve on that leg of his. Chris Godwin, similar situation with the neck on the DNP. Vita Vea suited up against the Falcons, but now he's on the report with a groin. And as for the Bills side of things, unfortunate news at the tight end position. Dawson Knox is going to have wrist surgery. His timeline to return, unknown as of right now. So that's the latest for Thursday Night Football, Michael.
Yeah, and the Dawson Knox one is kind of an interesting one to kind of walk down that road a little bit, because, you know, what the Bills have wanted to do all year is they want to be in 12, but they want to be in 11. You know, they want to be able to have some balance, and, you know, by drafting Dalton Kincaid, they got a receiver blocker, and then Knox is their blocker, so they have a better run game. Now, they only have one tight end on the roster right now, Kincaid. They're going to have to go sign a guy. And whomever they sign, the defense will know that's a run blocker or that's just another receiver. So they can then substitute. So this run game, which has been somewhat inconsistent for them when you break them down, I mean, they can run the football. When they're going good, like they did against Miami, and they're controlling the game, they're running the football. They're able to have balance, and Josh Allen doesn't have to be the leading rusher. But if they can't, you know, if they can't get that going, then it becomes a problem. And in the last 3 weeks, they've rushed for 29, 128, and 81 yards. And they've turned the ball over 6 times in those games. So I think this injury is significant to go along with the other injuries. Daquan Jones and Milano. Those two injuries are just really problematic for him. I mean, New England put 364 yards on him. They threw for 268. I mean, Jacksonville had 475. And, you know, the Giants, as bad as they are, they had 317. They ran for 132 against them. So this Buffalo team, as good as they are and as great as Josh Allen is, I'm telling you, Stormy, I watched that tape again yesterday in the All-22. I think he probably, any other quarterback would have been sacked eight times, at least eight times in the game. And he got out of them, all of them. And he made a throw after all of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them he had to throw out of bounds, but he made plays. It's remarkable how hard he is to get on the ground. And for a team that prides itself on being a nickel, I mean, they opened the game up with New England in nickel. They don't mess around. They're a nickel on first down. They don't care what you put on the field. They're a nickel. They're 24th in getting off the field on third down.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle for this Buffalo Bills team if you have to continue to ask your quarterback to be Superman. And it's great that he's able to do that in certain instances right now, but I don't think that that's a sustainable way to play football. And you need to start having some of those longer, sustained drives and keep your defense off the field, because how tired have they looked? And with all of those injuries and already being shorthanded from a talent standpoint, if you're stuck out there on the field, it's a recipe for disaster. Now, they do have a good opportunity, I think, taking on a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team this week. Big favorite again, Buffalo is, that maybe this could be a good, just like get back on track, get right opportunity for that defense with the Bucs, excuse me, that are coming off, you know, back-to-back losses. They just lose a division game to Atlanta. So an interesting matchup here, I think, on Thursday Night Football. And we talk about Josh Allen and everything that he's had to do. He has slipped in the MVP market significantly recently with the way that they've been losing games here. And for the fourth straight week, we have another new MVP favorite. So Patrick Mahomes is back on top at plus 275, leapfrogging Tua Tagovailoa. Josh Allen now down at 15-1. Was as short as plus 380 earlier this month. And then Jared Goff, who we had all the MVP narrative about coming into this week, like, okay, if they knock off the Lions here, this number is just going to get shorter and shorter. Well, they end up getting owned by Baltimore in this spot. And Lamar Jackson's odds have shrunk at plus 650. As you kind of look at this MVP odds board now, Michael, is there a bet to be made in your mind? I know we don't want to buy in too much on what immediately happened this past weekend, but what names stand out to you perhaps?
Well, I think you got to look at Lamar, right? I mean, Lamar's MVP odds, you've got to take a serious, strong look at, because he was sensational, right? He was so good the other day that I think you got to take a look. I think he's down, what, 650 to 1?
Yeah,
he was shot down there.
Yeah, he was 18 to 1, and now we're seeing 7 to 1 and plus 650.
Yeah, so, you know, I think you got to take a look at that really hard. I think, to me, the offensive player of the year is going to come down to McCaffrey. I mean, A.J. Brown makes a statement for what he did. I mean, he was outstanding. You know, and I think America saw what a great receiver he is. But, you know, and then Tyreek Hill. I mean, you know, McCaffrey and Tyreek Hill, it's a two. I haven't seen Chase. I worry about their offensive line. This week, Orlando Brown's not going to – he's not 100%. They're going against the 49ers. Can Chase really get it going there? Offensive Rookie of the Year, I mean, Puka, you got to think Puka's the leader, right? At plus 300, well, Stroud at plus 210, minus 210 is. But to me, if Stroud wasn't there, I think Puka would win it in a walkaway.
Well,
or a Chan, because they miss him. I mean, they really miss his speed on that field.
Yeah, if when he comes back from injured reserve can continue putting up the types of numbers that he did before the injury, I think that would certainly be a worthwhile approach there at 25 to 1 for Offensive Rookie of the Year. But are you surprised to see CJ Stroud at an odds-on number over $2 the way that he is now? Because we are still relatively early in the season. Obviously, injuries can happen. I mean, and he's been so great in terms of ball security to this point. But if the interceptions start stacking up, like, there's lots of opportunity, I think, still even on this board. I know we want to give it to a quarterback. We want to go that rookie quarterback that was the best of the year. But the numbers that Puka have been putting up, Michael, absolute, first of all, steal of the draft in the fifth round coming out of BYU. But his 752 receiving yards put him on pace, if he were to continue at this level, for over 1,800, which would be a record for a first-year receiver that has stood since 1960.
And he's still going to get every target, because people are going to take Cup out of the game with Cup back. and they're going to force the ball somewhere else. And as long as Stafford stays healthy, he'll continue to produce numbers. I mean, look, Stroud has been fantastic in the games he's played. You know, he's been very – I mean, think about where he's come from. The opening play of his NFL career, he's in shotgun, he's under center, and he doesn't even make a throw, it's so bad. And now he's playing under center when he never did that in college.
Yeah.
He's just been really good. Unless he – and he played behind – I mean, he goes into Jacksonville with backup offensive linemen all over the place, and he's able to go down there and win the game handily. So I don't think he's – you know, injury – and I don't want to jinx the poor kid – injury is the only thing that, to me, keeps him away from winning the Rookie of the Year.
I think he's a very rightful favorite. I just question the minus 210 at going into week 8 of the season. That's my only thought is I don't think that the price is necessarily warranted for where we are at right now. But, yeah, he's been great. And now, very unique role that he's in this coming weekend, taking on the Carolina Panthers, and we're going to have that head-to-head of the number one overall pick, Bryce Young, taking on the next picked quarterback in CJ Stroud, and he's a favorite in the game. So a 3-point road favorite in Carolina, Stroud is, after a run of the Texans, Michael, being underdogs in 21 straight road games to this point. It was the active streak in the National Football League. The last time they were a road favorite was week 14 in 2020 against Chicago.
Wow. I know, but they deserve to be the favorite. Now, look, we know there's a change in offensive coordinator in terms of play caller in Carolina, right? We know Thomas Brown's going to take it over. What will they do differently? How will they look differently? I mean, Frank Wright's still going to be the head coach. He didn't leave the team. So I think this will be a really kind of a way for Young to kind of get rejuvenated and start his second career. This is a Super Bowl for Carolina.
Yeah.
Let's make no mistake about it. This is their Super Bowl. And all the money's coming in on Houston. I think Carolina, if they're healthy, will play their best game of the year on Sunday.
Yeah, and especially if you're Bryce Young, those read between the lines comments you heard from your head coach, Frank Reich, who everybody behind the scenes has said CJ Stroud was the guy that he actually wanted. So an important game, certainly, for Bryce Young in this spot. And I did hear Frank Reich say he's not going to micromanage Thomas Brown. He's not going to, you know, be fully hands-on, but he will be in the meetings. And so, okay, yeah, you're still very much so involved, Frank. We understand. We got it. But, yeah, again, 3-point spread in that game, 43.5 coming up on Sunday. Certainly going to be a fun one to see those two rookies go head-to-head. The Panthers, the only team this year that have not won or covered a game. 0-5-1 ATS, 0-6 straight up. We're going to step aside, get to college football. We talk about all these awards markets. Let's shift our attention to the Heisman and an interesting slate of college football games with Aaron Moore when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. All you got to do is download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Use that in the NBA tonight. Reminder, the NBA betting guide available now. It's not too late when you become a VSiN.com subscriber, VSiN Pro Access. That'll also get you access to our college basketball betting guide that's coming out here soon. Our next guest, Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, was a big contributor to that college hoops betting guide. Also, deep dive into college football, been helping us out every single week. Welcome in, Aaron. We were just talking before the break about a lot of the NFL awards markets, and I think with you talking college football, very natural transition to the Heisman conversation, as we have a new favorite in that market as well with JJ McCarthy, as the Michigan Wolverines also happen to be the biggest story in college football right now. Lucky for John Harbaugh that they are on a bye, Jim Harbaugh, excuse me, that they are on a bye this week. But what do you make of JJ being the new favorite? And from a narrative standpoint, could all of this news impair his opportunity to win the award?
Well, Stormy, taking away the whole cheating scandal, let's talk about that in a second. Before that, it just is very surprising that McCarthy, a quarterback of a team that has a very good running back in Blake Corum, he's a Heisman candidate himself, obviously much further down the board in that 90-1 range. But what has McCarthy done to be the Heisman leader other than guide a very dominant team who's played a weak schedule while having some of the other candidates, like Caleb Williams, take a step back. Michael Penix last week didn't have a great game. So what has McCarthy done to be number one on the board? I don't see it. So that's first and foremost, I think, the problem with the Heisman is McCarthy really hasn't been a Heisman candidate. He's just kind of moved up as others have come down. Now let's put in this whole sign-stealing aspect and this idea of you ain't cheating, you ain't trying type of mentality that we know that's happened. And Michael mentioned it earlier. I heard talking about cheating in sports or stealing signs. We know that happens. And what I think is interesting from McCarthy's standpoint is now he's attached to this narrative. It can't help him. There's just no way it can help him. And the other idea that I think it hurts his candidacy and it hurts Harbaugh as well is media members who vote for these awards, they tend to be a little bit of a self-righteous group. Let me talk to you about Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, steroid guys in the Hall of Fame. So these voters for these awards tend to avoid these type of scandals. And I think all of that is really working against McCarthy. So he's a favorite. I don't understand why. And then you add in this cheating scandal. I think from a Heisman standpoint, you have to look elsewhere on the board.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was on Baton Rouge Radio today before our show, and I was making the case for Jaden Daniels. I mean, look, that they're the number one offense in the country, the number one scoring relative. I mean, every single number, it goes towards LSU. It's not his fault they gave up 55 to Ole Miss. It's not his fault they gave up 45 to Florida State. Like, I mean, I don't understand where this award has gone to. Well, you have to be the best player on the winning team. Whatever happened to being just the best player, period?
And I think if you look at Jaden Daniels, certainly he's a Heisman candidate that you have to look at. And LSU had their loss a lot earlier in the season. And I think that creates that domino effect that all of a sudden Daniels was just pushed down the board when USC was undefeated and Caleb Williams was there. So I don't necessarily know, Michael, if the odds board is a reflection of how people are going to vote. Now, we still have four or five more games to go. There's still going to be more wins and losses. But the odds board at this standpoint just doesn't line up with how people are going to vote. Now, if LSU can beat Alabama, all of a sudden, I think you're going to see Daniels go back to the top of the board. Hell, Michael Penix hasn't lost a game yet, and he took a step back. So I do think it's still a couple more weeks for these things to get situated. But if you're looking at it just from an objective standpoint of the Heisman odds board, I don't think it's a reflection of how people are going to vote in 3 or 4 weeks from now. Daniels, as you said, he's certainly live. He's doing at LSU what Joe Burrow did just a few years ago.
Yeah, and with that defense being so bad, it helps him pump up the numbers that much more, too, if he can overcome and start winning some of these games down the stretch. Here with Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, sports media professor. We're also 1 week out from the college football playoff selection committee coming out with their first set of official rankings. I wonder, as we're talking about voters and the human element as they go ahead and make their selections for the Heisman, it's also humans that are getting in a room and deciding who's going to go where on a team-by-team basis with those selection committee rankings. How different do you anticipate them being from what we've seen in the AP poll with people making those decisions?
I think it's, once again, Stormy, if we're talking about just betting, right, there is humans, there are subjectivity going on here. And as I always say when I talk about futures, particularly awards, you can't bet on what you think should happen. You have to look at what humans are going to vote on. I think it might be a little bit different. And if you look at it this way, you've got six teams for four spots, right? Those six teams that are undefeated. So you have to look at it. Who's going to get the first crack of not being in that top four? And I think that's where it looks at from a handicapping standpoint. So if we start at the top, you have Georgia and Michigan. It's depending on who's one or two. I think that can go either way. And it's one of the criticisms people have of college football. Those teams that are in the pole position early on that get that number one ranking before the season even starts, well, that matters. It might not be fair, but it matters. And Georgia and Michigan, at times this year, maybe haven't looked like a national championship team. but they haven't lost. So they're still going to be 1-2. And then we have to look who else fits in there. And at this point, Florida State, I think, deserves the number 3 spot because of that win against LSU. They beat Clemson. I understand it's not the Clemson we thought they would be. Duke has certainly taken a step back. But you've got those wins there. And then you've got the Ohio State presence of 2 Big Ten teams. And Ohio State has Notre Dame win, Penn State, Maryland. Those are all good wins. So I think you have those 4 teams in there. 1-2 could flip-flop. 3-4 could flip-flop. But then who gets shut out of these first rankings? And I think it's Washington and Oklahoma. And it's tough for Washington that they're going to be outside on this first 4. Because if we look at it, where Washington fits in, they still have 4 tough games remaining. So even if Washington is in that top 4, I can't really see them staying there because they have 4 top games. Of this 6 teams, the other one being Oklahoma, which I see as number 6, they have the hardest schedule. So if I'm wrong with those first 4 and Washington is in there, I don't see them staying in there after these 4 games that they have coming up over the next month.
Yeah, they do have a tough schedule because, you know, let's face it, the Pac-12 for it dissolving is still pretty good. Tennessee has the lead, playing well. Then the second half, Nick Saban makes adjustments and they can't do anything. You like them to continue that trend with taking Kentucky and the points this week?
Yeah, you know what, Michael? We talk about handicapping and we really obviously focus on numbers. But I'm going to go on the eye test. In watching that Tennessee-Alabama game last week, boy, I was not impressed with Tennessee. They have the early lead. I think Alabama kind of came out slow, and Tennessee had an opportunity to go back-to-back beating Alabama, and they just couldn't sustain it. I'm really not pleased with what I saw. So I am taking Kentucky. I'm taking the points. They're at home, and a lot of it has to do, I'm not pleased with what I saw with Tennessee last week. Kentucky is coming off of a bye. Tennessee, yes, they have 5 wins, but 2 of their SEC wins, Texas A&M, South Carolina, not really that big of a deal. And Kentucky has looked good. They started off the season well. I think people were really high on Kentucky. Then they lost to Georgia, and obviously no one's going to be upset with that. And then they lost to Missouri, but I don't think that Missouri loss is as bad as people want to say. Missouri's a pretty decent team. So give me Kentucky at home catching points, coming off a bye, while Tennessee played, at this point, their biggest game of the season. I got to believe there's a certain letdown factor, just the physical factor of playing Nick Saban's team. Now there's the letdown factor of losing that game. I'm taking Kentucky with the points.
Only about 60 seconds left here, Aaron, but any other games you want to make sure that you get out there you really liked on the card?
Well, there's a couple of them, Stormy. I think Duke versus Louisville is another good one to look at. I'm taking Louisville in this situation. And Louisville, after they had the big Notre Dame win, they lose the next week to Pittsburgh. And that's certainly a letdown situation. They lose to Pittsburgh, going to Pittsburgh. Not a great team, but still traveling to Pittsburgh was a tough one. Now they have a week off, and they welcome in Duke. And Duke last week lost to Florida State, and Florida State is obviously a physical team. That was a big opportunity for Duke that they didn't get a chance to pull off that upset. And we don't know what's happening with Riley Leonard and his ankle. And if there's any doubt about Riley Leonard, boy, I can't take Duke. So I like Louisville in this home situation.
Boy, and we saw right before our eyes how different that team looks with him in the lineup and with him out. Thanks so much, Aaron. You're awesome.
Thank you very much.
Good Great luck job, Aaron. Guys. Thank you.
Aaron Moore, also, again, contributing to the College Basketball Betting Guide as well. He is all over it. Appreciate his time here on VSiN. We are wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN is here to make you a more informed, better year-round. You can check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. That includes, as we've mentioned a couple times here, in the NBA getting underway today. Two games, Lakers, Nuggets, Suns, Warriors. You want to see where the money is going? That betting splits page will help you out. Also on VSiN.com is where you can find our pro tips that we do every single day here, every show at the network. But for us on the Lombardi Line, Michael, you delivered our pro tip today. Compliments of your article talking about NFL teams and how they are not trying to tank the same way that maybe we talk about that in the NBA. The NFL is a little bit different. And for us as handicappers, just because there's going to be all this talk at the trade deadline about teams and their trajectory being downward, we still need to handicap these individual games because players out there on the field are still going to be trying.
That's right. And they're working for jobs and coaches are coaching for jobs. So I think you have to be really careful about that. And plus, the book is smart. They put the numbers are set with this in mind. And so if you think you're getting a deal somewhere, as is most of the case, you're probably not getting a deal. So my recommendations are just, you know, that's NBA talk. It's not NFL talk.
Yeah, pro tips, again, available at VSiN.com, searchable by sport and by show. And Michael, wrapping up a conversation that we just had with Aaron Moore a little bit ago, we were talking all things college football. Just for my own curiosity, any games that you're excited about coming up this weekend or that you have interest in watching?
Well, obviously, I'm looking forward to watching Arizona's got a big game against Oregon
State. Pac-12 after dark.
That's a big one. Pac-12 after dark, exactly. I mean, that'll be a big game for them. And you know, I tend to gravitate towards the teams that I like have friends at where you could see and see how they're doing and all that stuff. But I'm with Steve, you know, like I like watching Michigan play. I think Georgia-Florida is always a fun game for me to watch because of, you know, it's the cocktail party, all that. But the other one I like is Oregon. Utah. Yeah. I love watching Utah play. That to me, you know, they just kind of have a way of playing. Whittingham's coaches his team hard. They play well, and nothing really bothers them at all.
Yeah, and that game too, Michael. We've seen that number climb. It opened with Oregon favored by 4 points here at Circa, and now we're seeing 6.5, 7s, and it's in Utah in Rice-Eccles Stadium that I don't think gets enough credit for the home field advantage that that place really is. The only loss that Utah's had at home in that building, with the exception, like since 2018, the only loss that they've had at home was in 2020, their first game of that COVID season with nobody in the stands. They lost their starting quarterback 2 quarters into the game, and they were coming off a COVID outbreak that had them push back their season 2 extra weeks. So it was like, that's the only game that they've lost since 2018 at home in Rice-Eccles Stadium. And that loss in 2018 was to Washington, who made the college football playoff. So I feel like getting a touchdown is just a lot. And I know that they're coming off a huge win. Maybe it's a letdown spot, but it's hard to have a letdown when you're facing the number 8 team in the country, right? So they'll be up for it.
They won't have a letdown. I mean, if they get beat, they get beat. It won't be because they had a letdown. And you know, I don't think people realize how hard it is to play. I mean, Salt Lake's in altitude. You know, we always talk about Colorado, but it's altitude. And, you know, Oregon's going from no altitude. So yeah, I agree with you. They always seem to me to be undervalued. They really do.
Yeah, it's every year I feel like they're kind of counted out despite everything that Kyle Whittingham has done, and they're still in a position to contend potentially. Like let's say they get an upset win at home, are they not in position to contend for a Pac-12 title again like they have the last handful of years? I am glad. Yeah. I am glad though, by the way, that we can put this Cam Rising saga to rest, that Whittingham officially said he's done for the rest of the year. Like, we don't have to do this are they, aren't they situation again for another week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, plus it's good for his team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have to worry about it anymore. You know, now he doesn't have to answer the questions anymore. So it works for him.
Also, with that Pac-12 After Dark game at Arizona, Oregon State laying 3.5, taking on the Wildcats in that spot. Arizona obviously playing some much improved football, which has been really cool to see the way that they've progressed under Jed Fish, defensively playing well. But now this week, I mean, the freshman quarterback Noah Fifita has been so good, but now Jaden Delora is getting healthy again, and Jed Fish is getting all these question marks about what do you do. But like, you have to keep going with the freshman, right? He's been great.
Yeah. He's been really good, you know, and he kind of started their program, you know, where he went to high school. McMillan, the receiver, was from there. Another player came from there, kind of got this thing going, and he's played really well. He's an instinctive kid. He's not very big, but he's very instinctive, and he throws the ball well. Look, they have some really good skill players. Their offensive line, I think their offensive line has three NFL players in it. Nobody would know it, but they're two of them are underclassmen, the left tackle Morgan. He's going to get drafted in the first two rounds of the NFL draft. So they've got players. They're getting better defensively. They're still one recruiting class away, but Jed's done a really nice job. Now they get to go to the Big 12, and we'll see. But they have quarterbacks. I mean, they got one of the best quarterbacks in the state of Arizona coming to them this year, too, next year. So they've actually turned this recruiting program around a little bit.
Yeah, I covered a lot of Arizona 2 years ago in Jed Fish's first season, and it was just an uphill battle trying to get buy-in culturally. And so to see what they've gone through when he had to take over the program to where they're at now, I think is really, really cool. Okay, like these last couple minutes, let's go back to the NFL and maybe just cruise through some of these more lopsided games in terms of the betting splits that we have seen so far. The Jets already, Michael, 90% of the handle and 78% of bets lay in the 2.5 in New York against the Giants.
And the line was 3. It went down, right? It went down. So, I mean, look, I don't know. I think these are two teams that have flaws to them, right? We know this. And, you know, I'm not sure who's going to play. If Daniel Jones can play, he's going to be the starter. There's no question. The Giants are not giving up on him. There's no question about that. They believe in them. But the Giants' defense has played really well the last few weeks. I mean, you cannot deny that. They've played very well. This is going to be a game where I think a lot of the pros are going to be on the Giants, and I think the public's going to be all over the Jets because the Jets are perceived to be impossible to run the ball on, and they're such a great defense, yada, yada, yada.
How about the Eagles' division game on the road, laying nearly a touchdown? Everybody is coming up Philly on this one. 90% of handle, 86% of the bets taking Philly again.
Yeah. You know, when I ran my numbers this morning, Stormy, and I kind of thought this was going to be, you know, I felt like this would be a bigger spread, and it was. I have it at 7.66. And the lines, I'm shocked it hasn't got to 7, considering that this Washington team offensively couldn't do a thing against the Falcons. They still won the game. They gave up over 400 yards. And then last week against the Giants, I mean, it was a punting contest. Now, I think the one thing we didn't really talk enough about, the win was a factor in that game. It really was. I mean, it made kicking field goals extremely hard and controlling the football. But I think if Philly's healthy, I would be shocked if Philly didn't if this line stays under 7, I could see a lot of money coming in on Philly.
Yeah, and while it's at the 6.5, grab it while you can now. Another team that was just dominant this past weekend, the Baltimore Ravens. They're laying 8.5 in Arizona, taking on the Cardinals. 76% of handle, 78% of bets. Agree with that line?
Yeah, I do. I had it 9.27, and Zach Ertz just went on IR. Another offensive weapon gone for the Cardinals. I mean, it's just starting to mount, and this Cardinal team cannot rush the passer. They can't cover in the secondary. Geno Smith in Seattle would have beaten them by 2 touchdowns, maybe 3, if Geno doesn't turn the ball over and they were a little bit sharper offensively. I can't imagine Baltimore will have a letdown. Baltimore's playing so well, and defensively they're playing really well. I know Harbaugh's teams usually will play to the level of the comp, but I think this is one you have to, at 8.5, I'm sure there's going to be some Arizona money buying it back here.
Yeah, the Cardinals in an interesting situation. We know Kyler Murray's practice window has opened, and so there's a lot of talk about, will he be coming back? I also know some people are just like, okay, we've seen enough Josh Dobbs. He's not winning us games. Can we get Clayton Tune in there and at least see what we have with the rookie from Houston, too? It's the stuff that is out there on the internet, Michael, is fascinating.
Oh, it's so good. It really is. I mean, people are so quick. Fire the coach, you know, but Kyle Shanahan got 3 years to get it turned around. But fire the coach anyway. You know, it's like You know, I want to be like the 49ers. We'll fire the coach. You know, like, I mean, seriously, at some point, either you got to settle in with the guy or you don't. Look, there's if you don't have a quarterback, as we know, no coach looks good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really hard to look good without a quarterback.
That's why you said earlier 19 teams that are at or sub 500 right now to start this season, and it's largely because of the subpar quarterback play that we have seen across the league. Great stuff, Michael, as always. That's going to do it for today's edition of the Lombardi Line. Come join us tomorrow, same time, same place.